Welcome to the Globetrotter Lounge podcast, conversations with women who have found creative ways to travel more. This is episode 60, and I'm your host, Jet Set Lizette. Today I talk with my friend Terrell Lozada, an American visual artist living in Paris since 2018. She uses imagery and language to create works that explore the metaphysics of gender and power in contemporary society. Terrell shares what sparked her love of travel, and specifically France, what led to her decision to move to Paris, and how she was able to make it happen. She also talks about what it's been like living in France during the pandemic and offers tips for those interested in experiencing Paris long term. Since one of my lifelong dreams is to live in the City of Lights, you know I was excited to have her on the show. Just a reminder that all resources mentioned during the episode can be found in the show notes at jetsetlizette.com/episode60. I also want to mention that this episode is sponsored by Waypoint Goods, a company that designs accessories that support and inspire women travelers. Their travel scarf is a perfect gift for the holidays. Not only is it a great way to keep valuables safe and secure while traveling, it's also perfect for around town, allowing you to ditch your purse and pants with pockets and go hands-free. I gave them as gifts a few years ago, and it was a huge hit. So visit waypointgoods.com and enter JetSet at checkout for 15% off. This episode is also sponsored by Wanderful, the leading women's travel collective. I hope to see you in downtown New Orleans March 12th and 13th, 2022, for their first major outdoor travel festival for women. It's called Wanderfest, and there will be great speakers like Travel Channel's Onika Raymond and author Patricia Schultz, plus live music, dancing, shopping, parades, and so much more. Enter to win two free tickets at wanderfestevent.com/jetset. They'll pick a winner on February 1st. So with that, let's go ahead and get into the interview. Well, welcome, Terrell, to the Globetrotter Lounge podcast. It's a real pleasure to be able to chat with you today.
Thank you.
So let's start off where we always start. Well, before that, I'm going to have to just say, you know, you're in Paris right now, and you've been there for a while now, and I've been meaning to interview you for years, literally. So I'm so excited that we're doing this at this time, finally. So very special to have you on, and I can't wait to hear about how you landed in Paris, because that is seriously one of my top three dreams in my life, is to live in Paris even for just a short time. So anyway, but let's start first with what sparked your love of travel?
Well, my family, I come from a military family. So we lived in Italy when I was young. My mom's family was stationed in Japan when she was young. So when we lived in Italy, we just traveled a lot. You know, every weekend my parents would pack the car and we would go to another country. So that's really where it started.
Okay. So you have a long history with travel and being able to travel and having it be just something that's a natural, normal thing to do. So when did you start traveling on your own? And were you traveling a lot as an adult, like young adult or into your adult years? Or were you just traveling occasionally? I mean, what did that look like for you?
I only traveled occasionally, but my preference was to go for longer periods. So in my mid-20s, I went to Florence and stayed a month. I had started a picture framing business. So I went over and I imported frames.
Wow, that's interesting.
And then, you know, and I went to Australia, you know, I'd go here and there, but I didn't travel a lot, but it was always something that I wanted to do.
And you were able to do it. I mean, were there ways in which, did you just save money? How were you making travel happen for you?
I was saving money. Well, I was saving money. And then in the days when I was using credit cards, I got into a lot of debt with travel.
Okay. So that was something that you had to then navigate and work through, I'm assuming.
I did. And then I had to learn how to travel without using credit.
Okay.
Which was an adventure and completely doable.
Okay. Yeah. So that became a better way to do it. And how did you do that? What did you change? How did you manage to travel after that?
Well, I mean, aside from having to save, it also meant that I had to be a lot more forward with my negotiating. So things like hotels and car rentals, you know, the first response was always no, you have to have a credit card. And what I learned is that if I was just adamant, as I am, that I'm not going to use debt or credit, that they will always find a way to accommodate me, even in foreign countries.
Great. So you really made it a priority to not go into any debt ever, always have money up front or figure out a way to do it so that you were not ever using credit. That's amazing. That's great. That's a lot of discipline and great way to stay financially healthy. I mean, I know I do the whole credit card sign up thing to get miles and points, but I religiously pay down to zero every month. I always spend only within my means and, you know, within a budget. So that, because yeah, it could get really sticky really fast with racking up debt. And that is not the goal.
It's not.
It's not the goal. But, you know, we can still travel. We can still do the things we want to do. Okay. So tell me about, you're an artist, which is going to factor heavily into this whole story of moving to Paris. So tell me a little bit about that, about your artist career.
Well, I'm a painter and a sculptor. And it's just been a lifelong dream to live in Paris. I've been a Francophile just since day one.
Mm-hmm. Did you grow up, or did you learn to speak French at a young age or anything like that?
I did. I got a degree in French literature.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So you must have had it in your mind then. How long has it been since you've been into France?
Oh, I'd say since I was about 12. 11, 12.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess I share that a little bit with you. Well, my mom's French Canadian, which is, you know, that is an entirely different country and entirely different experience. However, I grew up taking French classes and speaking French and with my mom and had been to Europe when I was very young. And I know it's once it kind of gets into you, it's like, ooh. So you had this desire to be in France. Now, had you traveled there a fair amount before you actually set off on this big adventure?
You know, amazingly, the first time I came to France was in 2013. My husband brought me for my 50th birthday, and I had decided that I'd made a pact with myself that I wasn't going to say anything about wanting to move there because I just didn't think he'd ever go for that. And we were about 3 days in, and we were walking around, you know, as one does in Paris, and completely gobsmacked. And he just pops out and says, you should live here. You belong here. We should figure out how we could live here part time. And I was like, oh, he so gets me. Thank you.
You're like, I'm with the right person.
That's right.
Wow. Okay. So that happened. And what happened next? How did this start to come about?
Well, he made a promise because on that trip when we were at Charles de Gaulle Airport and he was behind me and I'm handing the woman my boarding pass to get on the plane. And I just had this moment and I turned to him and said, we don't have to go. And he said, no, we have to get on the plane. And I said, no, we don't. And then he just looked very concerned. And he goes, no, we have to get on the plane. And I had a moment of clarity and I said, well, maybe you do. I don't. And he was like, please, 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 please get on the plane. I promise we'll come back. So we got on the plane and I cried. I cried. I was so sad to leave. And then we came again and we did a reconnaissance and stayed for a longer period of time. And when we were in the airport, again, we have all these big conversations in airports. And it was like, what would it take to move here? And we thought, well, it's probably going to take about 9 months to go back, sell the house, sell the cars, you know, all of that. And the first night we were back in Seattle, we looked at each other and it was like, why do we have to wait 9 months? And it was like, we don't. And then it was game on. And we moved here May of 2018.
Wow. So you just got to that point where it was ready. You were ready. It was time and you didn't even want to wait the 9 months. And so what was that like? Like just the logistics of that, like just selling the house, selling the car, you know, was it an intensely stressful time? Was it an exciting time? Both, all of the above and more?
Well, there were two parallel factors. One was that I felt compelled to live here. And the other was that I was deeply distressed by what was going on in the U.S., like deeply distressed. And it was actually that level of distress that got my husband willing to make the move. Like if it had just been me wanting to live here, I think it would have probably taken another 5 years. But that provided some wind in the sails. And because we were so clear about where we wanted to go, that was the big push that got us here. So there was the distress of selling, but part of it was really the main reason it was distressing was because every cell in my body was screaming at me to get out. So it was distressing.
Okay. So you had this other drive, which was, I really need to get out of the United States. I just need to get away from here. I need to get some space and I don't want to be here anymore. Okay.
Yeah. So there was an external push and there was an internal pull.
Okay. Got it. What was going to be the plan around work? And, you know, you're moving. What about your husband? Like how financially, you don't have to get into the nitty gritty, you know, tell us all the things, but just generally, what was the plan?
Well, he had a construction business. And then, of course, I had my art business and design business. And so we had to both close our businesses down. That was the first thing. But from the research that we had done, we'd talked to enough people. It was like, well, they're really into quality here. People need their homes remodeled. They need their apartments remodeled. It's the kind of thing where one can find work here. So what was important for us was to get the visas that would correspond to that. So we actually both applied for work visas. What they sent back was they gave me a talent visa, which is like the top of the heap. And by me getting a talent visa, he could ride on my visa and he had the option to either work or not work. So that was how we got here. And so for the first 2 years, that's what we had. And then my designation changed and now I'm in another sector and he has his own work visa because he started a business here as well. So we both started businesses here, right? You know, well, let me see. We got here 2018. We started our businesses the summer of 2019. So initially I thought we'll get there. It'll take like 3 months and then we'll start working. Did not happen that way. It took a year and we had enough in savings. We had financially planned for the trip. I mean, we had a cushion. We'd sold the house. So we had a cushion there. We had a budget. You know, this is how many months we think. If in worst case scenario, this is a budget for a year. And that was what it took before we started working.
Okay. So you were able to have that cushion. And then where did you end up? Are you renting? Did you buy a place? I mean, tell me, I mean, Paris is expensive. So
we did. Well, before we moved, so we had been in Paris for 2 months and we were renting an Airbnb. And what I discovered, I don't know if that's changed now, so much has, but with Airbnb, if you contact someone and say, I want to rent for a month, they will often give a hefty price break. And so she knocked her price down by like 40% because we wanted to rent for a month. And then we rented from her a second month. Then we came back, we got our visas, knew that we could indeed get here because we had the visas, sold the house, and then asked her, could we rent from you for a year? And she said, well, I wouldn't do this for anyone else because it was her pied-à-terre. She lives outside the city and she'd come in to do her shopping. But she said, for you, I will. And so we ended up renting her place for 2 years.
Wow. Okay. So you kind of got lucky. Well, not lucky, but you landed in a good place that allowed you to do that.
Well, we did get. And the other thing that was super helpful, she was just an angel, is that she helped us get a bank account. It's this weird thing in France, like in order to rent, you need a bank account. In order to get a bank account, you need to have a fixed address, like you need to be renting. And I had gone to the bank and they had given me this long list of things to do and sent me away. And I actually called her and said, do you have any advice for me as to how to proceed? I feel stuck. And she said, well, everyone knows it's impossible to get a French bank account. I'm coming into town next month. I'll bring paperwork and I'll go to the bank with you. And she did. And we were able to open an account, which was just a miracle.
Wow. Fantastic. Okay. I'm seriously like taking notes because, you know, underneath all of this, and like I said, why I have you on here is I'm like, I want to do this too. I want to figure out how to do this. Okay. I don't know why I had this idea that it's like extra hard in France. I remember looking up at one point some information about, you know, so you want to live in France. And, you know, there's a lot of things online about, I don't know, work and visas. And it felt like maybe it would be hard, you know, and like I'm in a position where because of my biological ancestry, I could actually get a UK ancestry visa, which would allow me to work and live there for like 5 years. And then from there, you can get citizenship. And, you know, part of me is like, okay, that's great. I'll be in Europe. But then I'm like, yeah, but I'd rather live in Paris, at least for a while, you know? So anyway, I'm really interested in these details, you know?
Well, and that's a really good point that you bring up. And when people ask me about it, the thing I always say in my experience is, yes, it's challenging, but I want to be here so wholeheartedly that I'm willing to do it. I know people here who came here because they married someone or, you know, work brought them here and they don't really care for the culture. And they complain a lot and talk about how hellish it is. So I have the benefit of being in love with this place. And so I'm willing to do the things that need to be done. I'm happy to do it, even though it's hard. To do this in a country that doesn't make my heart sing, I cannot even fathom doing the things that I've done to be here.
Right. Yep. That makes a lot of sense. It's just that passion and that drive behind it makes all the difference. And I think, you know, having that attitude of like, I can figure this out. I can do this. I want to do it. So I'm going to figure it out. And I'm going to ask for help. You know, like you asked for advice and then this person came through for you in a way you didn't even expect it. And anyway, so you were there, you were able to establish businesses. And how has that gone for you so far? Because then, of course, that was 2019, you established your businesses, and then we know what happened in 2020. How has it been for you? Is it working okay? Have there been some challenges?
Well, it's been fabulous. I mean, of all the places on the planet to be locked down, I'm super happy. Super happy to be locked down in Paris. It's like right on.
Yeah.
It's like,
yep.
I have had a lovely time. Yes, it has been challenging. The museums have been closed. I haven't been able to see my friends. Yes, there have been challenges. But all in all, it's been good. And the other thing is that here I have socialized medicine. Like I'm in the system. When I got here, I worked really hard to sign up for all the, you know, there's all these identity numbers and this is and that's. And I went through and I did all of that. So the other piece of it is that because we had businesses and we were paying into the system, there was COVID relief support here. So we paid into the system and the system helped support us during that time when we couldn't work. So
great. And tell me about your work. What is it? Just tell me what your work is right now. Just are you creating art? Are you? Yeah, just describe it.
Yeah. Big paintings.
I love paintings. What I see photo wise. I haven't gotten to go over there and see it in person yet, but
thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I deal with themes of power imbalance, gender, a lot of sort of women's issues in a way, and mixed in with metaphysical.
Okay. Yes. And, you know, I'll have links to like website, you know, where people can see your art. But I know you've had some shows, right?
I did. I had a solo show in 2020. It was scheduled for March and it got canceled, of course, for COVID. It got canceled the week before.
Wow.
And then they rescheduled it. The country opened up in October. And so I got to have the show and then the country shut back down. So there was this little window where I got to have my time.
Yay. I'm so glad. Yeah. And what you said about the lockdown, I literally remember seeing, you know, we were all seeing images from all around the world and, you know, reading about different lockdown experiences and things that were going on. And I was like, oh, to be locked down in Paris, because even if everything is closed, Paris, walking around Paris is like just an experience, you know. And I thought of you. I had another friend, I think, who was over there, and I was like, you know, they were describing some challenges, but I thought, I would rather be walking around Paris a little bit, you know, when I can get out, than be walking around Bellevue where I live. But that's okay. It's nice here. We got a lot of nature. It was really great. And I guess, and you guys couldn't go as far, right? When it was locked down there, you really had restrictions that were tighter.
Yeah, there were restrictions, yeah, on how far one could go. But it was really magical to ride bikes because there were no cars. And, you know, Doug and I would look at each other and it was like, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. And then, of course, when the restrictions were lifted on how far, then now we ride all over the city and the traffic levels are still not what they were.
Yeah. And to be around all of that without all the immense crush of tourism. I mean, I know that a lot of people's businesses, you know, depend on tourism. So I don't want to just, you know, I'm kind of coming from that place of privilege saying like, oh, it must be nice to be there without, you know, without all the tourists. But at the same time, it must be nice to be there without all the tourists, you know. And I wonder how, have you heard Parisians talking about that? Like what it's been like for them to feel like their city is really their city? I don't know. I'm making this up. I'm thinking this is what they're saying.
It's been a different experience to have fewer people here. Yeah, it's been kind of bizarre, actually. But and love, you know, it's like it's good and it's challenging. Yeah, I think there's been a general sense of it's been nice to have some quiet in the city, but it's starting to wake up now. And that's nice, too.
Yeah. So what have been some of the, I mean, obviously, you're in love with the country, in love with Paris. What are the benefits, maybe unexpected benefits you've found from moving abroad and going after this dream you've had? How has it changed you?
Well, it's given me a more realistic view of myself. I'm more resilient than I give myself credit for. I get things done to a degree that was easier to ignore in the US. But here it's like, wow, I did a lot. You know, I've got a social security number. I'm in the healthcare system. Like there were a lot of things that I look back and I'm just like, I did that.
Yeah. I guess it's like, yeah, finding out what we're made of, you know, when you go for something like that and move to somewhere where you don't really know people. Because I'm assuming you didn't have a lot of contacts there. Did you?
We knew no one when we moved here.
Okay.
We know a lot of people now.
Yeah.
Which is
right.
Fun.
Yeah. Because you've been there 3 years plus. And I always found when I moved somewhere, well, I've only moved somewhere once outside of the Seattle area, but that was Tucson, Arizona. But it was right about 2.5 years was when I felt like, this is really feeling like home. And then we left. We came back here and I was like, darn it. It was just starting to be great. But yeah, you're right in that sweet spot where you're like, yeah, I live here. This is home. So what would you say? First of all, I have to ask, is there any chance you're going to come back, like move back? Do you ever see that in your future? Or are you like, nope, I'm here. I'm here for the long haul.
No, absolutely okay. Not. No, it takes giant birthing forceps to get me out of Paris, even for vacation. I'm like, I don't want to go. Why would I leave?
And then I have to ask about your husband. Did he speak French?
No, he still doesn't.
How's he doing with all of that?
Well, he wants to learn, but he just hasn't gotten around to it. And, you know, he gets his needs met. He's very gregarious and he's really a good communicator and he's able to communicate even with nominal language skills. And we joke, you know, in a bakery, he can do anything in a bakery.
Okay. This is good to know because my husband doesn't speak French. Actually, very similarly, he's the one who, when we go on trips, you know, I usually know enough of, I speak a number of languages and I'll know enough to get myself in trouble or to freak out. My, you know, perfectionistic self gets on board, right? And he's like, oh, I'm butchering this or I'm worrying about that. And he doesn't care because he doesn't really speak. So he'll go in and make all the friends, find all the foods. There's been times where I'm the one who's kind of like hiding in the hotel or whatever going, I'm just not in the mood to go out and deal with this. And he's like, I'll go get everything. And then he comes back having made some friends, got new stuff, got directions to somewhere. And I'm like, how did you do this And you don't even speak the language, but it's his attitude, you know, it's just so friendly.
Totally. And so many people speak English here and they love to practice their English. So he does just even doing business, you know, setting up a business. He did all that with no language skills. So,
wow. And his business again is?
He's a carpenter and a general contractor.
Okay. Yeah. And my husband was a carpenter and a general contractor for quite a while. You know, this is looking good for me. I'm listening to you and I'm really seeing how this is all going to come together for me as well. No, but I'm also assuming that like for your husband and for you, there's a pretty strong expat community in general in Paris. I mean, I feel like I've seen that online. I've noticed it, you know, so I'm assuming that that's also a great way to make friends if you don't speak the language, that there specifically are expats there in Paris, a huge community. Yes?
There's a huge English-speaking community, Americans, and then, of course, Brits. So, yeah, it's a very tight community.
And so there's probably ways to socialize and go, you know, connect and different groups that of interests and things like that. I remember telling my husband that because he's like, well, what am I going to do? You know, I don't speak French. And I'm like, well, first of all, you're this excellent photographer now. Tourists come to take photos there. Maybe you could lead photo tours or maybe, you know, but I'm like, there's also going to be a lot of Americans there and English speakers there because Paris is so, I mean, draws everybody. So it sounds like I can continue to reassure him that he'll be fine.
Yeah. And it's interesting. That was precisely what my husband said to me. Like, what would I do there? I don't speak French. And he loves it here. He doesn't ever want to go back either.
Okay.
There's tons to do if you don't speak French, believe me.
And I'm definitely going to have my husband listen to this episode. I'll be like, see, look, this is doable, honey.
He can call Doug.
Okay.
Give him Doug's number.
Yes. Another reason why I need to get there sooner than later and bring my husband, and then we all need to hang out. Okay. So what advice would you have for someone like me who may not be ready to completely move away forever, but wants to be there in Paris for more than just like a month? You know, I'd like to be there maybe a year or two.
Well, it's doable. You don't need a visa, as you know, if it's 90 days or less. So we would do 89 days and did our exploring that way. And but in terms of a year, it's so doable. I don't know if that's advice. It's encouragement.
It's
you can
encouragement.
Do it.
So I can figure it out. Okay. I'll figure it out. Yeah. Because I would love, and it's good to know I could be there like 89 days. I think I did see that like up to 90 days. So, you know, I could do something mm-hmm. where I'm there that long and then I leave. And I don't know how, what the rules all are. I'll look that up. But I really want to make that happen because I feel like I'm tired of talking about it and I want to do it. Behind me in my bedroom, which you can't see right now, I have a huge photograph that my husband took. My husband's a photographer now. He doesn't do the contracting carpenter stuff anymore, but huge photo of this one incredible little street in Paris where we were just standing and talking for a long time. And then I remember it started to rain and I was getting impatient. This happens a lot when you're married to a photographer. You're like, come on, I'm hungry, you know, and he's like, wait one more minute. I'm going to get this shot, you know, and I'm cold and I'm hungry and it's raining. And he took the most incredible photo and it's over our bed. And it's like, I just stand there and look at that and go, when am I going to actually be there and like living there? But I know it's going to happen. So I really want to thank you for providing that inspiration and just encouraging me.
Of course. And I know a good dozen people who come for 3 months, they go back to the US, they come back for 3 months. I mean, it's a lot of people do it.
Okay. So I guess maybe you and I will be like talking about all of this over a coffee in a little cafe soon, maybe next year, because I'm going to have a lot of travel in my horizon next year. And now I'm definitely going to block out at least 3 months specifically for Paris.
I'm so excited. I have a ton of places to take you.
Okay, great. Well, it's been a true pleasure to talk to you. And thanks so much for coming onto the show. And I know we'll be in touch.
Thank you, Lizette. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Globetrotter Lounge podcast. This episode was produced by my podcast manager, Marcy Page. Show notes and resource links can be found at jetsetlizette.com. If you've enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts and tell your friends about the show. Thanks so much for tuning in and getting some travel inspiration. Remember, life is short, travel more.